We just wrapped up a great episode with Bree Berger, who brought some heat with telling us about how she grew her portfolio from a handful of units to 160 in a very short period of time. Her key to doing all of this, working with family. Might be an obstacle for a few people, but she shared some great tips on how to make that a seamless process and build wealth along the way. Patrick, what do you think about today's episode?
Today's episode was another banger. I mean, literally from talking about private money to talking about mindset to talking about the time when you're kind of caught up in everything and you need to reset and focus to put yourself to the next step. So if that sounds like you at all, you guys are going to love this episode. Listen to the end. She's got some great book recommendations, some great other resources that I think you all are going to benefit from. And with that, here it is.
You're listening to the Real FI Podcast, where we discuss time-tested tricks, techniques, and strategies for pursuing financial independence today so that we can enjoy a better tomorrow.
A better tomorrow.
Financial independence isn't about getting rich quick. It's about cultivating a foundation to grow financially, mentally, physically, and spiritually. Let's figure out how to kick the 9-to-5. Here are your hosts, Patrick and James.
How's it going, everybody? And welcome back to the Real FI Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick McGrath, with my co-host, James Ripion. James, how are you doing today?
Take two. It's going well, Patrick. Thanks for that warm invite. I botched our guest name, so we're going to do a retake on this one, and you're not going to hear how badly I mispronounced it. So anyways, we've got Bree Berger with us here today, and she's going to be telling us a little bit about her financial independence journey and what she's got on in her life with real estate. So without any further delay, Bree, why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners a little bit about what you got going on?
Yeah, so I am a real estate investor. I am a BRRRR investor and invest mainly out of state. And one of the things that I would say makes my real estate investment journey unique is I invest with family. So I invest with my sister and my brother-in-law, and we are working on building a family real estate investing empire. We invest in four states: Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Nebraska, and Colorado. We do mainly buy and hold, so buying really ugly properties, rehabbing them, getting them rented out, refinancing, so the BRRRR method. We have a couple of short-term and midterm rentals as well.
Wow, that's awesome.
There's a lot in there for sure. And I think right off the bat, we're going to have to go dig into the family wealth building strategy, because I know a lot of times when people decide to get into partnerships, whether it's with friends or with family, you know, sometimes there's these obstacles that you have to overcome to, you know, have a meeting of the minds and make sure that that syndication, so to speak, is working well. So, you know, tell us about how you started to get into investing with family and kind of how that's progressed.
Yeah. So I've been investing for about 5 years. I accidentally fell into it. I used to live in Pennsylvania and bought a house there as my primary, and then had a job opportunity taking me all the way up to California. At that time, I did not want to sell the house since I just purchased it. And people were like, well, you can rent it. And I was like, okay, sure, I'll try this renting thing. And so I did that, and I accidentally hit the 2% rule. So that was like, whoa, pretty cool. And then after I moved to California, I started researching all about real estate investing. I learned that it's how the majority of millionaires make their money, essentially, is through real estate. And I was like, that's cool, I can do that. And so I gave myself 6 months to learn everything and started acquiring properties in Pennsylvania from California. Fast forward about 2-3 years. And my brother-in-law started to express a lot of interest in getting involved because I was probably super annoying at family gatherings talking about real estate all of the time. And so he came on to the business and started to help out with the rehab side of things. So making sure the rehabs were being done correctly. He handles a lot of the finances as well. And we kind of were in cahoots with each other because we were like, we really need to get Boston, who's my sister, his wife, involved in this as well. She does a lot of back-end processes, well, she used to in her W-2. And it was like, all right, we got to get her involved. And so we like slowly pulled and got her involved. And she was like, I only want to do one property a year. And we were both like, yeah, right. So after she essentially drank the Kool-Aid, we started acquiring properties just left and right. And I went from my small portfolio of like 20 to 30 properties or units, to doing, we have 160 doors between all of us in the portfolio, including the syndication. So they've been involved for about 2 to 3 years, and I've been investing for about 5.
So you said 160 doors or 106?
Yep.
160.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. That is pretty impressive.
Oh, thank you.
That's very impressive. And I think one of the things that, you know, I kind of just jive in there is that I invest with my family too. Like my dad's a partner, my wife, Danielle, she's a partner. And, you know, you have that mixed bag about getting into partnerships with friends and family. It's kind of shunned upon. But if you have, and it's all about the right partnership. So sometimes your friends and family can be the right partners, as long as you're setting those expectations in job roles and, you know, you guys are all kind of level set. So it sounds like you have that going on. Has there been any issues, you know, with investing with your family, being your brother-in-law and your sister? Like, let's dive into that just a little bit to kind of help clear some of that out for people that might be thinking that they want to do it or they don't want to do it.
And if you don't want to call them issues, we can call them obstacles overcome.
Opportunities for growth.
Exactly. Mutual understanding.
I wouldn't say there's been any, you know, sort of huge issues. One thing that we are all committed to is what I like to call doing the work. So we do a lot of different business, life coaching, we're in GoBundance, we're in various masterminds, things like that. And so we are always working on our mindset and also how we can always keep improving the business. So yes, we've delineated roles and responsibilities. I'm the visionary. Logan handles a lot of the rehabs, keeping things on track, a lot of the finances, because oftentimes it feels like we're in the mafia with all of the banking accounts and moving money around. And my sister's the integrator. So it's like, here's what I want to do. Here's where we need to take the business. She creates the processes in order to make that happen. So we have our various strengths. We've all made mistakes along the way, but that's where doing the work comes in, because we're not going to like blame each other. Nothing is ever personal. And oftentimes we'll debrief on any sort of, you know, opportunity for improvement or issue that comes up. We'll have a debriefing like, hey, what went wrong with that? How could we have supported each other better through that? And that's really allowed us to, I would say, have a very successful partnership. Also, our goals are aligned, our values are aligned when it comes to trust, integrity, communication, all of those key aspects that you look for in a partnership with someone. We're all aligned on those things. So whether it's family or someone else you're considering, get very clear with what your values are as a person and make sure those align as well.
And you'll hear Patrick and I say this a lot. You know, it comes down to dating your potential partner, you know, whenever it comes to either marriage or getting into a business financial relationship. You want to know that whoever you're getting in business with is going to have shared values. And I think that you can get past a lot of those unknowns when you're investing with family, because you have a long track record with them. There's already a lot of ingrained trust built into that relationship. So I think there's a lot of benefits to be found there as well. And you had mentioned that your sister is more of the integrator. And I'm just kind of curious on what your perspective on this would be. Do you think that because she's maybe more, you know, inclined to work on processes, that she's maybe a little bit risk adverse? Because you had started off the conversation by saying she wanted to do only one property at a time. So it sounds like you, it might be somewhat of the visionary. So like, flesh out those roles a little bit and how they kind of come together with your business and your growth.
Yeah. So, the reason she wanted to do one property a year was because I think she didn't fully understand the power of real estate. Now, the three of us are all athletes, which does not provide a lot of checks and balances when you're athletically inclined and like competition oriented and very like pedal to the metal, like we're going to crush this. And so once we all were on the same page in terms of we want to grow, there was no like stopping us. We went, I think in 1 year, like just a handful of units to 80 in a year. And so that's where I would say we're almost too similar. Like, even though she is the integrator, she played D1 soccer at University of Wyoming. Like, you know, she's she's not the one to like hold the brakes for us. And we've actually had those conversations where it's like, none of us are holding the brakes for each other. So that is very interesting. So I think the real issue was like her not understanding the power of real estate. And once she did, it was like, all right, full speed ahead. And more recently, we've had to have more conversations and like, all right, where do we want the business to go? How do we want it to align with our lives? And we're actually in like a recovery period. We're going to take the next few months. Unless something really checks all of the boxes for us, we're not going to acquire additional property. We're going to wrap up the projects that we have. And give ourselves a strong foundation for 2024. And that's the first time we've done that in like 2.5-3 years.
That sounds like you guys are very much aligned. And I love that by having that back and forth, by you know, figuring out what you guys need, all kind of growing together. And then now during this time that we're in, kind of reflecting and going, hey, we've grown so much. Let's take a time to reset. Let's see everything that's working, everything that's not working, and then figure out where the next plan is, you know? So with that, let's kind of rewind a little bit and go back to kind of those first couple properties that you got when everybody got on board and how you were able to grow it so quickly. Cause I know there's so many people out there like just trying to buy one property or their next property, and you know, how were you able to do the BRRRR method so quickly to acquire, you know, all of these units in a short period of time?
Yeah. So I would say one of my most important values, or we could call it a currency, is relationships. I believe that for my personal life, and especially when it comes to relationship or real estate, that relationships are probably the most important thing when it comes to our success. And so, for example, our portfolio in Pennsylvania is where we have the majority of our units. And that is due to the relationships that we have with our property managers there, particularly one group of property management that's in an area where we invest. So what happened was when I first started investing, I went through property managers left and right, you know, fire fast, hire slow sort of thing, and met someone named Adam. He was working for a company at the time, and he expressed to me that he wanted to leave that company and start his own company with the goal of only working with a handful of investors and helping them to find properties. He would also have the construction crew in place, and then would then onboard those properties to the management side of the company. And so through his own relationships within that area, we were able to find off-market deals. And this was all during COVID, which was a great time to actually have this relationship in place. And so we found a 6 single family unit portfolio. We were finding 5 units, 6 units, you know, duplexes, quads. And that was all due to the relationship that we had with him. My brother-in-law, who is from Nebraska, that's the reason that we actually started investing in Nebraska, was due to the relationships that he had in that community. And so we were able to acquire a decent sized portfolio there, and we're working on strengthening those relationships so we can keep growing in that market as well.
Well, with all that growth, you know, one has to ask, where the hell did all this money come from, and how are you financing all these new and subsequent acquisitions? Because going from, you know, a handful of units to 160 in a relatively short period of time, you know, that's the big missing part of the equation. So fill us in on that aspect of how you were funding these deals.
Yeah. So we started using private lenders a couple of years ago. And this all came from my cousin, who wanted to get involved in real estate investing with me. But at the time, she didn't really have a background in real estate. She was working her W-2, and she couldn't really add a lot of value to me in terms of what I needed in a partnership. So I had a pretty candid conversation with her and was like, hey, I cannot afford to take a partner on that doesn't do any of the work. Like, I can't continue to do all aspects. And she was, and so I was like, but there's this thing called private lending, where if you give me your money, I'll give you a return on it. I will take your money, use it to buy property, rehab property, and then give you the return. So we've built up a pretty substantial pool of private lenders, mostly friends and family, who have reached out to us and just asked how they can get involved in real estate investing. So we give a 10% return. We put everyone on a 12-month note. And we also, here's the a bit of the creative part. We collateralize those notes against our already stabilized assets. So a lot of people, when they do private lending, they'll take the money and they'll collateralize it against the property that they're actually like purchasing, that they're going to be rehabbing. But some feedback we got from some of our private lenders was, hey, if something goes wrong, I don't want to take over a property, you know, that's half rehabbed. And so we're like, well, cool, we'll just collateralize it against our stabilized, you know, assets that already have quite a bit of equity built up. They've been rehabbed. They have a cash, you know, cash flowing tenant in place. And our private lenders really think that that's a safer option for them, especially since many of them don't have a background in real estate. So it all started with my cousin. I started gaining the confidence to actually put out on social media what we do, and friends and family started reaching out. And we're now learning the self-directed IRA world, where people can invest with us through their self-directed IRAs in the terms of private notes. So, and then just how we do that. So, we will take the money that we get from private lenders and then combine that with hard money. So we'll kind of stack it. So we'll use the private funds for the down payment, stack it with a hard money loan purchase, and then rehab and get out of the properties within 6 to 12 months. And with the refinance, we're able to pay everyone back.
Okay. So you're using the hard money as the down payment portion, the 10 to 20% or 25%, whatever, you know, your hard money is offering. And then the hard money is also funding the renovation, or are you using the private money for the renovation?
Usually we use the private money for the renovation. Then we don't have to pay, pay the higher amount back to the private lender. Plus, we'd rather give people we like and know the 10% return rather than our hard money lender.
Exactly. Makes a ton of sense. All right. So you're using the private money for the down payment and for the renovation, and the hard money to, you know, get that 80% or whatever you need to acquire the property. And then because it's hard money, if you finish the property in 3 months, you can go to the bank and refinance on that new value, because it's basically off the books. And then you go and just repeat over and over and over again.
Correct. You got it.
That's amazing. And I think, you know, it gets you to that confidence is which you need. I love that you said that, because when you're first starting out, you're doing it with your own funds or pooling funds together. And it takes a level of confidence to go out and take someone's money that you know, that you already have a relationship with, to actually go out and do it. And I think, talk to us about that first time that you actually did that, because I'm sure that was a little nerve wracking. There's a lot of people, even myself, I'm getting ready to use private money for the first time. So like, what was it during that process and then after that process that really kind of like maybe hit a switch?
Yeah. So I have a fantastic business coach. Her name's Liz Carroll. And it was during a couple of years ago when I was working with her. I still work with her, but I was having like more intensive meetings with her. And I was really struggling with the idea of partnerships. And this was before my family got involved, where it was like, man, I do a lot of work. And to give like half of that away to someone, I just really, really struggled with that, because I didn't have a mentor in this. I came from a public health background. I was a professor. Like, I should not be the person that invests in real estate. I didn't have mentors I could reach out to. I didn't have anyone take me underneath their wing and kind of say, hey, I'll partner with you and I'll teach you the ropes. And so when it came time when people started reaching out about wanting to partner with me, I really struggled. And I had these conversations with Liz of like, I don't really feel like they can add anything. I don't know what value they can add to me in the sense of like, I need someone who can help with the rehabs or who can call utility companies or who can help with the bookkeeping, like, but they don't know how to do that. And so she talked with me about how they use private lenders in her business, with her and her husband. And she really helped me to put down the boundaries in place and to like, be okay saying no to people, if they wanted to partner, and to say, hey, no, like that doesn't really work for me and my business. And here's an alternative. And so her and I kind of had a few sessions on how do I do this? How do I work with this? Especially since the person reaching out about this at this particular moment was my cousin, who I love dearly. We do like scuba diving trips together. We hang out all. And so it's really hard to say no to someone when you have that type of relationship with them. And so Liz really helped me come with the script, get the confidence to say, yep, this is not what I'm looking for. Here's an alternative. And it might even align better with your investing goals, because if you want to partner on something, you're going to have to learn how to do all these things. And she and my cousin was like, no, I don't really want to do that. But I would like to diversify my own investments. And so it was definitely the business coaching that really helped with the confidence to just put out there and be very clear with my boundaries and what I wanted in terms of the private lending versus a partnership.
And I think it's super important because you definitely short-circuited a lot of the headaches that you would have otherwise had if you hadn't have had that mentorship and that consulting with how to approach that very difficult and in many respects sensitive conversation with family members. So, you know, in hindsight, do you think that without that mentorship, you would have maybe gone about it maybe a wrong way or a different way?
Oh, absolutely. I would have learned from my mistakes in that particular, aspect. And I've learned from many mistakes in real estate, but I really try now to surround myself by people who are miles ahead of where I want to be and learn from them. And so in that particular case, it saved me from making mistakes in terms of like probably doing a partnership with her that would not have been beneficial to me and what I was looking for in terms of growing my own portfolio. And with her, how her life trajectory was going, it probably would have created a lot of stress in her life as well, having to be a partner in something like that rather than just a passive investor.
That's great. So I kind of want to dive into this mentorship, mentorships as a whole, as well as you mentioned GoBundance earlier, and kind of what led you to that. And then but talk about the programs and like how it's really, you believe, took you to that next level.
Yeah. So I get business and sort of this life coaching from Liz. I'm part of GoBundance Women. And then I'm also in another mastermind called Whale Club, which is based on this book called Rigging the Game. Not sure if you guys know that, by Dan Nicholson. And it's all about learning what your own game is when it comes to life and business, and then creating the decision processes in place on how to play it. And when it comes to all three of those, Liz and I, it's more of that one-on-one. And sometimes we do some group mindset work with a small group of women. But it's typically, sort of that one-on-one approach. GoBundance Women is a network, very high, more of this high income, group of people. They have the GoBundance Men and Men's and GoBundance Women side. And so there, it's really just tapping into that like collective genius, so to speak, of women who have their own business, they're entrepreneurs, they're real estate investors. They just had an event in Orlando. And so for me, it was like, I got to connect with all of these amazing women, ask them questions. Everyone's so giving and willing to help. So as long as you're clear with what you're looking for, you can put it out there and, they'll come back to you and say, hey, I have this person you should talk to. I have this resource that would be helpful. And Whale Club, I just started that about 9 or 10 weeks ago. A friend of mine, Paul Sparks, runs it. And I met with him before this started over a lunch and kind of expressed to him, like, I'm just at this point where I don't really know what's next. I had just quit my main W-2, accomplished that goal, the first step of becoming FI, right? Financially independent, had the FU money to leave that job. And I was like, cool, I checked this box. Now I don't know what's next. And he's like, hey, I have this mastermind. You should come and check it out. And it's about learning what your game is and how to accomplish, what you want. So how to get closer to what you want rather than just doing more for the sake of doing more. And so all three of them, they're very complementary. GoBundance is the network. And then Liz is that one-on-one approach. And Well Club is really that like mindset and decision-making.
So I think that's super interesting. I'm going to put you in a very difficult spot right now. I want you to pick, because those are very three uniquely different working on yourself and improving yourself. You've got the one-on-one coaching, you've got the peer group, and then you've got some sort of the whale club, which kind of helps you develop what your path in life is going to be, it sounds like. So which of those three do you think you've gained the most benefit from? Like, if you had to identify just one of them that was really helping you to level up your game, which one do you think would be? And I know you've only been in Whale Club for about, you know, a couple of weeks now, but if you had to identify one, what would you choose?
Yeah, I would have to say, honestly, working with Liz. She was the first person I started working with, and just having that one-on-one, coaching with her was really that big initial first step that then got me access to all these other groups and people with the confidence to say, yeah, I'm going to own the identity of I'm a real estate investor. I'm an entrepreneur. Like, I belong in these groups. And so it was really her that it was like, okay, we're going to get you to this first step. Now, these other groups, of course, are helping me to grow exponentially in these other areas. But honestly, without Liz, it would have taken me so much longer to probably get to that confidence, that mindset, where it's like, no, I can own this identity now. Like, I belong here, and I can actually add value as well. You know, that's also a really cool thing, is like, oh, I have enough experience where I can add value to these other people.
That's amazing. I love that. And, you know, we've talked to quite a few guests that have been a part of different programs like this and different levels of coaching. And everyone has talked about, you know, taking that initial step, and it's just improved their game, improved their lives, you know, exponentially over the cost. Like, they basically said, like, you don't even worry about it, because it comes back to you, you know, 10 or 100 fold. So I think that's so important. And now that we're kind of through that, I would like to kind of jump back to the portfolio for a second. And if you could kind of give us an overall breakdown, you know, of those 160 units, you know, are they single family, small multifamily? Do you have any mid-size in there? You know, and you talked about some Airbnb. Like, let's kind of like get an idea of what this portfolio really looks like.
Yeah. The majority of our portfolio is single family and small multi. So anywhere from like a 2 to 6 units are what we would consider small multifamily in our portfolio. I like single family because it opens up the buyer pool. If we ever needed to get liquid real quick, we could sell off some of our single families, because people who are investors, new investors, and people who want a home just for themselves, right, would be our market. We don't have really anything in that mid-size range, like that, you know, 8, 9, 10 to 20. And then we do have a 42-unit syndication. So myself, my sister, our two GPs, my partner Yang, and then other business partner Andy, were the four GPs on that syndication. And we acquired that a year ago. And so that is what the majority of the portfolio would be.
That's great. I love the breakdown. I love the thought process behind that too. You know, having the single families, easy to sell, easy to rent. You know, that's freaking awesome. I think that's kind of where I'm going to be headed here over the next year or two, if things start coming back on the market. Like, we all know there's nothing right now. But with that, like, you invest a lot in Pennsylvania and some of these other, like, I wouldn't necessarily say smaller areas, but I think more value add areas, lower price points. So what would you say that average price point of one of these single families that you have in your portfolio, you know, was bought at, and then after you refinanced it, kind of where the value sits now?
Yeah. So the majority of our single families would be in Nebraska and Pennsylvania. And when we were really buying a lot of single families, I would say about a year and a half ago, we would purchase them anywhere between, I would say, $65,000 to like $100,000, put about $20,000 to $30,000 in. And then they would refi anywhere between $150,000 to $180,000.
Okay.
That's great. Yeah. And then they would rent, just so you could kind of get a sense for the cash flow, anywhere between $1,300 and $1,500.
Okay. So Basically right around that 1%. You were buying them almost at, you know, 50 to 65% of the after repair value. Yep. And then they were hitting that 1% and you were just burning through just like that. So with that being said, you know, I'm sure everybody is wondering, like, what's the value of 160 unit portfolio? And what does that thing bring in, you know, on a monthly basis? If you can share round numbers, you know, yeah. And all of that, if you'd like, or anything you don't want to share is totally fine.
Yeah, I'll give you guys some rough guesstimates. And I'm going to take the 42 unit out of that. So we're looking at probably about 120 units split out between my own stuff that I have with my sister and brother-in-law. There's a couple of properties I do have with my parents. And then Boston and Logan stuff. So we probably bring in a little over 120K of revenue per month. Okay. And in terms of like the cash flow, like annually, we would probably have, I would say, between 150 to 200K. And taking out the syndication, the value of the portfolio is probably around anywhere between 6 to 8 million.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. I love jumping into these numbers because it just shows people what is possible in a short period of time when, you know, the stars can align. You find your partners, you get your funding, and you go and you hit it, and we're going to grow this thing. And in a short period of time, you can create, you know, a life-changing business that you have years to still grow. This is where you're at now. Just, you know, imagine 3, 5, 10, 15 years down the road where this is going to be. So I think that's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah. And to people who are listening, if you're thinking like, oh, I can't do that, like there's no way. Again, I should not be a real estate investor. Like I was like a super academic egghead. I went to school like all the way. I had this dream of like being a professor and like that was going to be my life. Like I was not entrepreneurial. I was not business mindset. You can do it. Like you can do it. Just start learning and then start acting, you know, start taking those actionable steps. At my first like true investment property, it took me a year to rehab. It took me a whole year to like find the property management. And I learned, had so many mistakes, but I didn't stop. I went into it with like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this big.
All right, Bree, you know, based off what you just said there, I'm going to take you down a path and I'm curious to see what you're going to say. I want you to give your younger self advice. Now you're doing something completely opposite what I'm sure you started out in life thinking you were going to do, you know, going down the academic route. But I want you to, you know, transport yourself back to when you're maybe 17 years old and give yourself some advice. What would you tell your younger self?
Buy houses.
What would you say about college in particular? Like, would you maybe advise against it? You know, what would be your thoughts there?
Yeah, it's such an interesting question. And I've talked about this before with other people. I try and live my life without having any regrets and how I can always learn from my experiences. So because of my academic training, I'm trained as a researcher. I can apply those processes and that way of thinking to real estate. So anytime we enter a market, we don't go big. I know there's people out there who are in real estate that are like, let's go big. And like, we're in this new market and let's buy this 100 unit. I'm like, let's test it out. Let's test your team out. Let's, you know, pilot test it, right? Which is what you do in research. You always do a pilot test before you do your big study. So in my advice to my younger self, I mean, I don't know that my 17-year-old self would have listened. But I probably just would have said, you know, learn everything you can with whatever path you choose. And make sure that those skills are transferable. Like always think about how I can transfer those skills to other things. And then whenever I came across real estate, like I could be able to apply what I was learning to a sort of a different content area, if that makes sense. So, but if I would have been a 17-year-old that would have listened, I would have said, buy houses wherever you're choosing to go to college. Just take out student loans and buy the house.
I think that's perfect advice. My mom would always say, luck is when preparation meets opportunity, and you never know what that opportunity is going to look like and how it presents itself. So as long as you're doing, you know, your best at whatever you got your hands in, things are going to come across your plate that you can, you know, take advantage of. And for you, it happened to be real estate. For somebody else, it might be some sort of other, you know, business or corporate opportunity, whatever it might be. But I think the important lesson there is get off your ass, do the hard work, and prepare yourself for the opportunities that might come and present themselves later. So I think that's super valuable.
Yeah. You should have been giving me advice when I was 17. That message I probably would have listened
well,
to.
Well, you know, I think you were spot on by saying you don't know if you would have listened, because I know myself. If I were talking to myself, I would have said at that point, 17-year-old me talking to 31-year-old me, 17-year-old me would have said, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, I'm smarter than you. I know what I'm doing. You know, don't give me advice. And I guess that's the interesting part of that experiment. The question is, you know, it probably would have gone unheard in the first place.
Yeah. And I think what is it? I like going back to the question of what would you tell your younger self? Because, you know, you're sitting at a place now and it's like, well, if I did change anything, would that change where I'm at now? And I'm really happy where I'm at now. And I think the people listening need to understand that too. Like, hey, you're already at a great place by listening to the podcast, by wanting to get more information, by hearing these conversations and putting yourself in all of these different situations. So, you know, you go back and just think like, hey, these are the things that I kind of wish I would have done now. And I loved how you said, make sure those skills are transferable. So for someone that is in their early 20s, and hoping to have their first rental property by the time they're 30 or something like that. Like, you've still got a couple years to figure some things out. And it's just, you know, like you said, making sure that what you're doing now, it can play a part down the road, you know, and we're all going to look back and wish we did some things a little different, but they get us ultimately to where we are today. I never would have thought like someone like yourself that wanted to be a professor would be sitting here with, you know, $8 million real estate portfolio talking, you know, and quitting down the road. So I think all that advice is great. And with that, you know, I kind of want to get into like, what are your goals now? Like, what are the goals for the business, you know, unit wise? Is it, you know, a net worth wise? Is it a cash flow wise? You know, are you guys looking to hit 25 million? Like, let's talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah. So I don't have a goal as far as number of units, and neither my sister or brother-in-law. We're not really driven by, cool, let's get to like 1,000 units. What we are focused on is the outcome and the efficiency of the number of units that we have. And so our goal is to get to 1 million of cash flow every year. And that would give us more than enough like equity and appreciation in terms of what our portfolio would be worth, that we would be probably close to having like a 50 million real estate portfolio if we were cash flowing 1 million. And we came to that through listing like what are our priorities that we have in life, right? So our priority would be making sure we can pay for our own house, right? Our mortgages, our food, any sort of like basic needs that we would have, like the musts. So what is that must list? What is your priorities? And then we were thinking then what would be like the nice to haves, right? So I love traveling. I hate going to the airport and flying coach. So I want to be able to travel anywhere in the world, but I want to fly first class. Like it's just, I could fall asleep. Like it's just a much more enjoyable experience. I don't care that I don't have it now, but at some point that would be really nice. And so we listed, you know, those things out where it's like the nice to haves. And so that's how we got to that million cash flow that would cover everything that we could dream of doing. And right now, you know, I quit my W-2 a few months ago. You know, I have my needs taken care of. I live a really great life, a lot of gratitude for everything that I have. But I'm not quite able to fly first class yet.
So we've got the goal down. You know, we've got a great outline for like what we want to do. Let's talk a little bit about the how. So are we going to be 5X-ing the number of single families that we have? Or do you think you're going to be pursuing a different kind of path? Because I know you've done one syndication so far, and that's one way to get there. So like as far as how you're going to accomplish that, you know, what are your thoughts with that?
Yeah. So with where we are in the business, our recovery period, so to speak, We'll be wrapping up some projects, and we're going to be having some, I would say, deeper conversations over the next few months in terms of that how. But also, for us, the how isn't necessarily important. What's important is fostering the relationships. What's important is getting really good at what we already do, and the how is going to present itself, right? You know, we've had to say no to a couple of deals that people brought to us because they didn't align with the type of life we wanted to have. So we're at a point where people are wanting to partner with us on bigger stuff. And so the how will come to us. It's just a matter of like getting aligned in terms of what kind of life do we want to be living? You know, do we want to be creating other jobs for ourselves? Because some of those deals that came to us was like, wow, we're going to have to be meeting with city councils and talking about zoning and permitting. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. You know, that's not for me. And so we said no, because that would have created other jobs for us. And so we'll keep doing with what we're very good at, buying single families, small multifamilies in the markets that we're in. And we'll be open to other deals, larger deals, potentially other partnerships that might present a different kind of how.
I think that makes a ton of sense. And I love that you're aware of that. And I think that is one of the things that as you're growing a business and as you're hitting some of these milestones, that it takes a lot of self-reflection, you know? I love that you said it's not about the unit count, it's about the lifestyle and about, you know, knowing what you want to spend your time on, because our time is our most important asset, and turning things away. And I appreciate that so much, because I think in the beginning, everybody's like, oh, I need everything, because I have this goal. And you're trying to get there, and you're trying to get there. And then you get there, and you're like, well, what's next? And now these new things are important to me, because I learned all these lessons around down the road. So I think that self-reflection and that knowing that your ability to change course and willingness to change course and pivot along is extremely important as an entrepreneur and someone that's growing a business, you know? And I just wanted to get your perspective on that.
Which part?
With like just having like that mindset of being able to pivot, kind of like what you guys are doing now, you know what I mean? Like taking that time out, like, do you feel that as you've grown, the goal and all of that has kind of changed?
Yeah, I would say so. And with exactly what you described, in terms of like just saying yes to everything and just being in that massive growth mode. I mean, that was 3 years for us. And I like, just to give some perspective, I had two W-2s. I had a statistical consulting company. I was investing in real estate. My sister and brother-in-law have two kids. They each had their own W-2s. And we were massively growing, you know, buying 2-3 properties a month, going from 20 doors to 80 doors within the course of like a year, year and a half. And we didn't take the time to pause and think and, you know, kind of ponder like, is this the direction we want to be going in? Is this the type of lifestyle we want? I mean, there were nights where like we weren't sleeping. There were problems that were coming up that it was like, I can't just solve this in 5 seconds. Like, we're going to have to think about this over the course of several days. I mean, there were a lot of challenges that came up, especially with that rapid growth. And so now I would say to be through that, I wouldn't change it. If we did want to grow. So, and that's what we did. We wanted to give ourselves financial independence, and that's what we did. My sister was able to leave her W-2 a couple of months ago, and now she's a loan officer. So she's pivoting more into that real estate space. So, you know, two of us out of the three left our W-2s, and my brother-in-law changed his. So we had enough financial, you know, independence and confidence there where he could change his W-2. And now we're in the luxury of like, cool, we can breathe for a second. We don't need to be like closing a syndication while the holidays are going on, while we're doing a bunch of other deals. And so I think when it does come to business, being able to pivot and being able to get yourself to a place where you can step back and say, okay, we don't actually need any more right now. Like, we're good. And let's figure out what we want our lives to look like and then build the business around that.
I think that's super important. I've recognized this with myself a lot is, and with those that we've spoken to, you know, a lot of the path, the importance of the path that we're on is not to reach, you know, retirement. You know, I've got a problem with the FIRE movement, with the retire early side of things, because it kind of shapes up to be like an unfulfilling end result. Like, all right, what the hell do I do now? But what I think is important is the first half of that is the financial independence, because time and time again, every conversation we'd have with someone who's successful, it's when they reach that financial independence with the fuck you money, where they can kind of look at their environment and say, selectively, I do not want to do that. I do want to do this. And what I do want to do is going to really help me grow personally, professionally with my business. And it's a matter of doing it because you want to and you can, not because you have to. So I think that's like what's super important for people to reach that that one period in their financial lives where you can finally hit that hockey stick of like growth, because it's at that point where you remove all the limiting beliefs. So it sounds like if you haven't already reached it, at least two out of three of your partners have reached it. You guys are well on your way to being there. And I think that's awesome. You know, that's what the game is to be played for.
Yeah. And I love what you're saying there, because it's like about also having enough insight, I think, to once you get to that point, just to take a step back, because that chaos, that growth mode has been like our habits, our world for the past few years. And so, you know, your listeners out there, like when you're in it like this, just like create some sort of endpoint, some sort of boundary so you can take that step back and reflect. Because I've met people who are in this for like 5, 10, 15 years and like their health is horrible. They don't always have the types of relationships they want to have with their family and friends. They're not doing things that bring them joy in life. Like they just get stuck in this, like, I got to hustle. I got to get the next thing. I got to get the next thing. And I'm like, that's where the mindset, the groups, all of those different things come in, where it's like, no, like, it's okay to be in recovery mode. It's okay to not be acquiring properties for a little bit. Like, that's totally fine. Can focus on other things. So yeah, James, I think that goes right along the lines with what you're saying.
I'm there right now. Like, this is my point right now where I'm going through all of this stuff and trying to figure out the journey. I think some of that plays into, just we've been in that cycle for the last 6 years. You know, we got a big project that's getting ready to start. And it's like, what are we doing after that? What's going on in the world? What's going on in the market, you know, that's playing into some of this? So I kind of want to dive into that a little bit with you. Is partly this, hey, it's time for us to take a break. And then, hey, maybe what do you feel as someone who's acquired so many properties all over the country in the last couple of years with the current state of the market? Are things just not looking like deals? Is there a little too much economic uncertainty right now with rates and all of that? Or is that playing a part in some of this decision? Or is it just like, you know what, we just need to take a break and we're going to kick back up in a few months and keep going towards our goals?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter. I think, you know, if you think back to the beginning of COVID, where there was all of the speculation that we're going to hit a recession and the markets are going to crash and da 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 da. And the people who decided to like go on the sidelines and not invest, they missed out. We acquired the bulk of our portfolio during that time and in markets that we're not supposed to appreciate. I mean, we're in cash flow. The majority of our markets are cash flow markets. We're not investing for appreciation. That's icing on the cake, but we invest mainly for cash flow because that's what we wanted the cash flow to leave our jobs, right? Now we have the luxury of maybe looking at some appreciating markets. But if people were listening to a lot of the rhetoric then, they missed out. And so right now, I don't have a crystal ball. I listen to all of these market podcasts and read about, oh, we're going to be in a recession at the end of the year. Oh, I think I just saw headlines. 42% of economists think we're not going to go into a recession. And it's like, I don't know. What I do know is my markets. What I do know is how to run my numbers. And what I do know is that I have great teams in each of those markets so that we can continue to buy if we choose. We're just not right now. I mean, we have like 6 or 7 rehabs going on right now. So we want to kind of wrap those up, especially before the holidays. But those are the things I know. And those are the things that I can have at least somewhat control over. I did hear, I don't remember, I think it was the Tribe of Millionaires podcast. And one of the guys was talking about how he's running his numbers just a bit more conservatively, trying to look more at the tail ends of what it could be in terms of like the rates, if the rates were to go up. And so to run the model a few different ways. And I was like, that's pretty good advice. So, you know, we'll probably start looking at doing our underwriting that way, looking at just, all right, if they keep going up, what do we need to be at? If they go down, you know, what do we need to be at, so to speak? So, but no, I wouldn't say like markets go up and down, but they do. It's not always like, yeah.
And I think, you know, looking back in hindsight, which we have the distinct pleasure of doing today, anybody who stayed out of the market 2020, 2019, even 2021, it was because of fear. You know, it wasn't necessarily because the numbers didn't work. And everybody who was very successful, they would always come back to the philosophy, run your numbers. If the numbers work, the deals work, and then just keep doing this forever and it's going to average out. You know, I think, you know, today is definitely an interesting time. I'm not going to say there are no deals, but, you know, interest rates are high and prices are at all times high. So, you know, I think going back to the original advice, run the numbers. If the numbers work, don't let fear be your only factor in making a decision for you. But, you know, as you've alluded to, you know, do it with a conservative basis too. And if the numbers work, feel comfortable taking the risk. There's going to be an element of fear in there no matter what, but don't let fear drive 100% of your decision making.
Yeah. And understand what those fears are. Understand what an acceptable loss is for you. And that's where I think the whole idea of pilot testing comes into place. If you're a newer investor and you're not sure if you should get started, and you know, a property comes across and the numbers work and you're like, no, I'm going to wait for interest rates to go down. I would say really dig in and understand what your fears are, and then calculate like worst case scenario, what would you lose? What would you lose on a $100,000 house? Would you lose $20K because you overspent on rehab? Okay, hold it. Just make sure you can hold it for 5 or 10 years. And I'm sure real estate is very forgiving. I remember one of my property managers said to me, it's probably the only thing that you can fail up in. If you hold it long enough, you fail up. So analyze your fears, calculate what your acceptable loss is, and just go for it. You know, how much money do we spend on college? Right? $20K a semester? Okay. Well, you know, losing $20K on a house that you can hold and it's probably still going to work out 5 or 10 years from now. You know, just do it.
I love that. I love that advice. Everything you said right there, I hope hit home with you listeners. And with that, I think this is a perfect segue into the next segment of the show that we call the Big Four.
Big Four.
James, take it away, sir.
All right, Bree, you're ready. So First question, I want you to tell our listeners something that you do in your business or personal life that is a financial independence cheat code, something that it's a hack that has helped you propel your finances forward.
Yeah, it's relationships. Relationships are the cheat code. So when you're, I would say just because you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a little bit different than all of your friends. Surround yourself that normalizes that. Surround yourself by people that are going to normalize that for you, right? So be around people who think differently, who are like, no, the normal 9-to-5 isn't for me. Oh, the normal way of investing just in the stock market only isn't for me, right? Surround yourself by people who are at that next level. Create great relationships with people that could be part of your investing team somehow, right? Contractors, property managers, realtors, lenders, right? So surround yourself by great, fantastic people, and you're going to see like your life change, you know, rapidly. So I would say that's worked for me. It's definitely has been my cheat code to getting me where I am.
Fantastic.
your network is your net worth. I mean, that's where your relationships come in. So fantastic answer and great solid advice. So number two, we call this one resources. So are there any particular books, podcasts, or people that have influenced your real estate journey, your finance mindset, all of that, that maybe our listeners haven't heard of?
Yeah, so I sprinkled them in. So I would say my business coach, Liz Carroll, and then GoBundance Women has been amazing for me. I've been a part of that organization for about a year and a half now. And then most recently, Well Club. And then the two books for me are Rigging the Game by Dan Nicholson. That's been huge. It's been a game changer. It's allowed, I would say, our business right now to like be okay with being in the recovery period, to take some time to do that deep work to figure out where we want to be going. And then I love Who Not How by Dan Sullivan. So again, going back to the relationships, you don't have to figure it all out yourself. You just need to find the right people.
That's great advice. And everyone should take a note there. All right, Bree, next question. Future you, 5 years from now, where are you professionally and personally?
Yeah. So I'm definitely happy with where I am professionally. I still have one W-2. I teach online classes for university, got the real estate business. So I hope to be doing both of those things. I would hope in 5 years that we're at that $1 million cash flow mark. I think it's very doable. We can get there. We can do it. I have, you know, great sister, great brother-in-law, we can get there. And as far as personally, I hope to be diving into more of the hobbies that I love. I love salsa dancing, bachata dancing. So I'm on some dance teams. I'd really would like to take more time and next level in that. I want to get my pilot's license. So, you know, maybe I have my own plane. And so I don't have to wait in lines at the airport. I can just like hop on my little Cessna and, you know, go skiing in Aspen or something. just really enjoy traveling more. I would say doing the things that really bring me joy in life. I would hope that 5 years from now, my life is starting to look more balanced towards the hobbies, friends, family, and becoming less and less about just the business.
Fantastic. That sounds like a great life. And I love that too. One of my goals is to get my pilot's license. And just for those, that same reason, just because we built the freedom to just be able to go. I love the first class thing too. That is a dream as well. But I think being able to get in your own plane, not have to wait through TSA or any of that stuff. Yeah. That's the true first class right there. So I love that. This has been a great podcast for anyone that is motivated, inspired, you know, wants to reach out to you and follow along on your journey. Where's the best place for them to connect?
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram. My handle is BREA_REI45. So real estate investor for financial independence.
Well, you guys know the drill. Go give her a follow, shoot her a message, tell her you love the podcast. You need any advice, it sounds like you'd be so willing to help out, answer anybody's questions. And with that, you guys know the drill. If you like this episode, if you hated this episode, leave us a review, do something, show James and I that you're out there listening, that you're out there learning, that you're out there getting inspired and motivated to go follow your dreams to financial freedom. Google, Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. And with that, we'll catch you next time. See you guys.
See you guys.
Thank you for listening to the Real FI podcast, where you learn from the investors that have lived the hard lessons for you. To connect with us during your pursuit of financial independence, be sure to join our community by following us on Instagram or emailing us at info@therealfi.com. If this content made you financially, mentally, physically, or spiritually richer, please make sure to leave us a positive review on your preferred content platform. Cheers to kicking the 9-to-5.